I'm going to switch gears a little bit on you. I'm actually going to be presenting on a acute HIV screening study that we did at three of our sites. And I did want to go ahead and make the disclaimer that we did use the Aptima assay off-label. We did use it for pooling. It was validated, and both CLIA and CLEP validated for use in this study. So I'm not sure how familiar many of you are with acute HIV infection. I'm sure everybody knows what HIV is. But the acute stage of the disease is actually the early stage. It's the stage where you have the peak of virus in blood and genital secretions. You have the presence and shedding of very large amounts of virus. And it's also the period before you have any detectable antibody. So the virus is there, but the body hasn't yet created the antibody response to the infection. Many individuals who are in this stage can exhibit fever and flu-like symptoms. However, if they go to see a healthcare provider and that provider sees them, they'll be like, oh, you have flu, you're not feeling good, take some Tylenol, go home. They might not think to do an HIV test, or if they've had an HIV test, don't link those symptoms or signs with possible early infection. So the public health impact of acute HIV infection is that it contributes to the spread of HIV because individuals are unaware of infection and they're highly infectious. If I go to an STD clinic and I do an antibody test and I have acute HIV infection, I'm sent on my way with a negative antibody test and I think I'm fine, which means I am going to either continue or start to engage in activity that could put myself or other people at risk. This stage of the disease is also an important opportunity for HIV prevention. If we can get individuals in the early and acute stage of HIV infection linked to care, one, we can help them prevent transmission to others, and two, sometimes there are opportunities that are available to them for either early treatment or other treatment options. Pooling techniques have actually made the use of HIV RNA screening assays more cost-effective, which is important public health-wise because to do an HIV RNA test, it is time-consuming and it is expensive, and having these pooling options makes it a more accessible option to health departments or to hospitals. So to detect acute HIV infection, the added value of adding this screening is going to be dependent on the antibody assay that you're using. Depending on the assay that you use, you're going to change your window of detection. And what I mean by window of detection is that's the interval from infection to the point of detection, no matter what type of test you're using. Common detection methods are our antibody tests, and our newer detection methods are using these screening RNA tests. So this visual is going to walk you through some of the markers for HIV infection. I'm actually going to illustrate what I mean by this window of detection. So first we're going to look at HIV RNA, and it's detectable at around 11 days. We're going to look at P24 antigen, which is detectable at 16 days. And we're going to look at HIV antibody, which is detectable around day 22. Now, if I use a first-generation test, Virinostica is an example of one of those tests. The window of detection is 55 days from the day of infection. If I use a better HIV antibody test, say a second-generation test, my window of detection has dropped 10 days to 45. If I take it one step further and say I use a Bio-Rad EI plus O, my window of detection drops to 22 days. So you can see that the better the antibody test, the smaller this window for acute infection. So a little bit about the New York City Department of Health with our STD clinics. We have 10 clinics. They're located in all 5 boroughs. They provide services free of charge. We provide services to individuals who are 12 years of age or older without parental consent. You don't have to have proof of insurance, or show any proof of immigration status to receive services at our clinic. All 10 clinics are open Monday through Friday. 5 of our clinics are open for a half day on Saturday, and in 2007 we did about 115,000 visits. The HIV services that we offer at our clinics, we offer antibody testing, and it's a confidential or anonymous test. Rapid HIV testing by oral fluid is our default. However, we do offer conventional test technology. We do offer PCR testing, but this is done on a case-by-case basis, and it involves special arrangements with our lab. It involves taking extra blood, and it involves probably around a week of wait time for the results to come back for the patient. However, we do actually draw confirmatory blood on all of our HIV rapid testers. So if you come into one of our clinics, you have a rapid HIV test done before we even swab you, we're drawing that confirmatory blood up front in the event that that rapid test comes back preliminary positive, so we already have it to do our follow-up testing. In the event that somebody is HIV negative, this blood is discarded at the end of the day. So, the project objective, we were part of a CDC multi-site study, and we wanted to measure the acceptability of HIV NAT to our clinic population. We actually had an opt-in component for our study since we were doing rapid testing, and we wanted to be able to identify factors that affected the acceptability in our setting. So our study period was from June to December 2007. The study is still ongoing, but we've only been able to clean and do analysis on those first 6 months. It was a systematic sample at 3 of our 10 STD clinics. We chose the 3 sites that actually do the largest volume of HIV testing. We chose a site that's up in Morrisania, which is in the Bronx. We chose a site that was in Chelsea, which is in Manhattan, and a site in Fort Greene, which is in Brooklyn. And each of these sites serves slightly different populations. Up in the Bronx, we're dealing primarily with Hispanic, Latino, immigrant population. Chelsea, we're dealing primarily with a more affluent MSM population. And Fort Greene really is one of our melting pot clinics, but we do have a higher Caribbean and Afro-American group there. The eligible study population was confidential HIV testers greater than or equal to 18 years of age. Starting in late January, we have been able to offer this service to minors, but none of the data that's reflected here will show that. Acceptance of acute HIV screening is indicated by a patient giving written consent and a provision of a blood specimen for testing. Our blood specimens from participants with HIV negative test results were pooled for nucleic acid amplification testing up at New York State with the Wadsworth Lab. For those who may not be familiar with what a pooling procedure is, we used one-stage pooling, meaning that we would take, or New York State actually, would take 16 aliquots out of 16 HIV rapid negative specimens, and they would use them to create one single master pool. And basically, this is a cost-saving measure because it allows us to do one HIV RNA test for 16 individuals. In the event that a pool is positive, they go back to those original 16 aliquots and then test each person individually. People who came through our clinic, if they were a conventional tester, meaning we didn't have a rapid HIV antibody result for them, they could still have a NAT test done and they received an individual test. And individuals who were preliminary positive were also eligible to have an individual RNA test done. They were not pooled. So the pooling only concerns individuals who were rapid antibody negative. So just to go over what our testing algorithm was, we have our screening EIA, which in New York City was a rapid antibody test. If it was negative, you were eligible for pooled NAT. If the pool was negative, you were reported out as being HIV negative. If the pool was positive, it was deconstructed and an individual NAT was done on all 16 individuals. If your test was positive, it was repeated, and if it was repeatedly positive, we then went one step further and did a viral load test, and the result was reported back to us as a presumptive acute HIV infection. If your individual NAT was negative, you were still considered negative. For individuals who were preliminary positive, we did an individual NAT. If you're repeatedly positive, it simply was a confirmatory test for your HIV infection. And if you were negative, we assumed that you were HIV negative. Now, for all the individuals who were preliminary positive and came out HIV virus negative, they had discordant rapid results. All of our oral fluid rapid positive results are followed with a finger stick and with the EIA Western blot. So all of the ones that we had were also EIA Western blot and OraSure finger stick negative. So that original oral fluid test was a false positive test. So we were able to offer this screening test to around 10,000 people at the three research sites. Of those, around 4,888, or about 47%, accepted. And of those accepting, 99% were eligible for pooled NAT, meaning they had an HIV antibody negative test. Interestingly enough, around 182 people actually came back to the clinic to do the test more than one time. And I think there's a handful of people who actually came four. As I mentioned, the three clinic sites that we used were geographically as well as demographically different, and their participation rates were not the same. If you look at the top line, which actually is our Morrisania clinic, not our Chelsea clinic, we actually had a really high participation rate up in the Bronx. The green line, which is our, for some reason all the colors got messed up. The green line is actually Fort Greene Clinic, and the purple line is actually Chelsea. And Fort Greene was our primarily melting pot, Chelsea was our MSM. There were two events that caused a decrease in our participation. 3 months in, we needed to add a research HIPAA, and adding an additional piece of paper was definitely a barrier at our Fort Greene clinic. And in October, we actually changed our enrollment hours due to the shipping restrictions that we had with FedEx. When we first started the project, we were only enrolling until 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And when we were able to get that worked out, we were able to enroll all day. However, we didn't see the influx of participants that we were expecting in the late afternoon hours. A lot of people wanted to get into the clinic and get out. We did want to look to see if there was a difference between individuals who accepted acute HIV infection screening and those who refused. And some very preliminary and basic statistics showed us that individuals were significant for gender, race, ethnicity, sexual risk factor, insurance status, history of previous HIV test, and history of previous STD diagnosis, but not for age. Additional logistic regression needs to be done to actually tease out what really is going on with these variables. So what can we conclude from all of this? Well, the acceptability of HIV NAT screening was surprisingly low. It was 47%. We were hoping for something closer to 75%, which is what we saw at our clinic in the Bronx, but not at the other two sites. Why was this? Well, historically, there is some unwillingness for people to participate in research. People just don't want to have somebody having their information. The burden of the additional HIPAA and the consent form did deter some people, and as I mentioned, you could see the dip when we added the additional research HIPAA form. A lot of people did not want to wait for 5 to 7 days to get this test result back. I'm walking into a clinic and I have the instant gratification of getting my HIV result right now. Why do I want to wait 5 days for something that could possibly be different? And then again, also the attitude of our staff who are offering the test. Some of our staff were very good at persuading people to and encouraging them to have the test done. Some staff, not so much. We did actually identify 6 cases of acute HIV infection out of the pooled HIV negative samples. We were able to bring all 6 individuals back to the clinic for repeat testing. They all were HIV infected. We were able to link them to care earlier, and we were actually able in some instances to get several partners in for testing and treatment, one of which was a newly pregnant partner. So we were able to get her in, we were able to get her antibody and NAT tested, and something like that makes a project like this all worth it, because she would have otherwise not known, because she would have continued to have sexual relations with this partner who had impregnated her. In 2007, we performed over 50,000 confidential HIV antibody tests. This is not dealing with any of the anonymous tests that we do. So if we were able to take that 0.12% and multiply that out through the number of tests we do, we could possibly identify an additional 65 people who walk in and out of our clinic each year thinking that they're HIV negative. Half the people that we found with this project, this was the first time they'd walked into one of our clinics, and it could have very possibly been the last. Why do we want to continue doing it? As I mentioned at the beginning, diagnosing acute HIV infection can curtail transmission, as early HIV infected individuals are usually unaware of their infection status, and again, they're highly infectious. However, strategies should be devised to surmount barriers to the acceptance of HIV NAT screening, especially among persons at increased risk. Again, we had an opt-in model for this project. It would be much more effective, and we probably would have found more cases had it been an opt-out situation. I'd like to acknowledge my project officer at the CDC, as well as this would not have been possible without all of the work of the staff at the three clinic sites who do all the day-to-day work, as well as my counterparts at the New York State HIV lab. The additional cost of identifying those six people, as in the additional cost to the person, or the additional cost? The cost of testing. CDC is actually doing our cost-effective analysis right now, but I would like to think of it as, by identifying that person, what is the cost savings by now preventing the possible spread of infection that they could have caused? So I think no matter what, it's always going to be a win-win situation. Yes. No, it's just it's just standard policy. Are you talking about the 0.12%?
No.
Are you talking about the increase? Okay, so I can give you a rough idea. We roughly it's about 500 people, Steve. Correct, but again, this was a research project. It was opt-in, so we're not hitting everybody we would need to ultimately hit.
Right, but right now,
meaning that the groups are different. The groups are significantly different. Those who elected to accept acute HIV screening versus those who were eligible and chose not to.